Today on Geek Nerd Tech, Facebook revenues are rising and Avengers Infinity War is breaking all records. Fasten your seatbelts. Let's get right into it.
You are tuned in to Black Hollywood Live's Geek Nerd Tech.
Yeah. Welcome to Black Hollywood Live. This is Geek Nerd Tech, also known as GNT. I'm Akili Sean, your host, where we cover the best technology and geek and nerd stories in the land. To my right, back in the building, Joe K. Braswell. He's been off on sabbatical. Hey, man, what's good?
It's good. I'm back.
Back in the building.
Back in the building.
Yes, sir.
GNT, VHL. I'm excited. Like I said, I don't even know, you know, how a microphone works.
Stop it.
I don't know how to talk anymore. But, tech stories,
yeah, you already know
stories,
what's up, man.
Stories, we got plenty.
When we started this show, almost going on 4 years ago, man. This has just been crazy, man. But hey, catch us up. What you been working on, man?
Oh God, well, I had a talk show, the talk show on Viacom's VET.
Yes, sir.
We have a couple of documentaries that we've been in the lab with, and a couple more television shows and. I don't know. Just trying to produce TV like you.
So essentially, you've been eating. You've been getting this money.
Yeah, trying to eat. Trying to eat. But, you know. But also, I'm still a nerd, still a geek, still follow tech news.
Yes, sir. Yeah.
But it's good to see you. You've been holding it down. Everything good?
I've been holding it down, man. Everything's good. Yeah, man. Just, you know. You've missed a lot of critical stories that have happened.
Yeah.
But, hey, I'm glad you're back. We're going to rock it.
But when I left, Every other story was about Facebook and Facebook's growth,
right?
And Facebook's acquisition of something, Facebook's PR spin.
We're still in the same time.
I'm sure everything's changed.
Nothing has changed. And speaking of Facebook, let's just hop right in, man.
Right.
So Facebook is killing it, bro. Like, still killing. I know that you're like a hater of Mark Zuckerberg,
yes.
But it's all good. But they bringing in them bees, bro.
Bees.
2.2 billion monthly active users, up almost 13% since the same period of last year. Facebook is getting it done. Even through the whole Cambridge Analytic data scandal, they're still bringing in the revenue, man. And I guess the thing is, like, you kind of hit the nail on the head. Facebook's ability to kind of, like, survey the marketplace and be like, okay, this is what's going on in the zeitgeist. Let's watch a little bit. Let's see what's happening. And then let's try to, like, re-engineer it and do it much better.
Right.
And Facebook has done that time and time again.
Sure.
I mean, we look at Instagram. We look at all the things that they've kind of killed off.
Yeah.
And so Facebook is known to do that. And so my question to you is, why do you think that people, even through all this scandal and people's information not being protected and, you know, elections being hacked and privacy issues, Facebook is still on the incline?
I think, unfortunately, this is a number I'm pulling out of my ass, but I want to say 50% of the active Facebook users view Facebook as a utility, like you viewed the phone company or the electric company back in the day. Like, it's just something that is there. Don't know how it works. I pick up my phone as a dial tone. I dial. I hang up. I don't know all the wires work and what they're doing in the corporate suite. Like, you know, that people view Facebook as that now. Facebook is so ubiquitous and so, you know, in our culture that, like, my mom and aunties and grandmas and even people in my peer group, you know, I'm middle aged and, you know, people in my peer group and up, they don't really know how the sausage is made.
Right.
They just fire up the Facebook and stories are coming at them and people are sending pictures of babies and friends and that's all they know. So I'm saying that to say that, like, we don't care. People don't care. And we as is evident by, you know, our election, not to get political, but, like, people are not paying attention. So, and people that are paying attention, you know, are shrugging their shoulders at it. So Facebook, despite all of this sort of scandal, the data scandal, everything else, people, they can't quit you. They're like Pookie in New Jack City.
Dang, they hooked.
They can't quit it. They need Scotty to come help them.
The Facebook addiction.
Come get me, Scotty!
Well, hey, man, they are, like I said, ramping up revenue. The company generated $12 billion in the first quarter of this year. It's up 37% year over year. It earned $1.69 per share. They're bringing in the bucks, man.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's just amazing. But let me run this by you as it relates to Facebook. So because of the whole, you know, privacy scandal and people's information information being siphoned off. A lot of high-profile celebrities and influencers were like, you know, I'm not fucking with Facebook. Yeah. And you have the whole delete Facebook, hashtag delete Facebook movement. Sure. And two of the biggest people were Jim Carrey and entrepreneur Elon Musk.
Right.
But that has no effect.
Zero effect. Well, Jim Carrey is, I hate to say, is not really, he's not in the popular zeitgeist anymore. So he is no, he's a little bit off the reservation. Elon Musk is, I mean, Elon Musk runs essentially a technology company as well, you know. So, you know, the Tim Cooks and Elon Musks and Jeff Bezoses of the world, you know, and Dote and Serge and the YouTube guys, I mean, the Google guys don't get to sort of say shit about Facebook because they're competitors.
Pretty much.
However, what I will say is that the delete Facebook thing is a tough one because I was going to delete Facebook. I drafted.
Really? You were a part of the hashtag delete Facebook movement?
This is a true story. I drafted a full post, a Facebook post. I swear this happened. About talking about how I'm off Facebook and I just can't, blah, 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 blah. But you can catch me on Instagram.
I can't. I'm out.
Which is owned by Facebook. So what are we talking about here?
Pretty much.
So I don't know what to do myself because I'm cool on Instagram. I love Instagram.
Of course.
And Instagram has got me just like Facebook has got, you know, my peers and my parents.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't know what to do. Yeah, so it's not going to have any effect because I'm speaking from experience who is not a fan of Facebook and not a fan of Zuck.
I'm the opposite of you. I am a fan. Like, I love Facebook. Yeah. I feel like I just seeing it evolve from me being in the college years to now. And I mean, I get it. Like, you know, it's so expansive that it includes so many different demographics. But again, 2.2 billion active users. They got so many people using it. But there's something on Facebook for everybody.
They can lose a billion and keep it moving.
100%.
Like, seriously.
And I'm just so admired by how they've just been able to innovate and dominate for such a sustainable amount of time. Yeah. And one of the things I mentioned earlier was just how they're able to, again, survey the market, see what's out there, and make it better. And one of the things they're doing now is they're going to, implement a kind of like a Reddit feature into Facebook where you have this downvote feature where you can actually dislike something. So we all know that you can make a comment and like things. But what about saying I don't like something? Mm-hmm. And so they're actually beta testing it right now in Australia and New Zealand. And so I guess the question is, do you think that this is something that is long overdue for the platform? And do you think that people are going to react to it in a positive or negative way?
It's hard to say. I mean, this is, Facebook is really good at sort of, again, surveying the landscape, seeing what's out there, and then acquiring it or trying to acquire it. If they can't acquire it, then they just copy it. And they tried to acquire Snapchat multiple times.
Yep.
Didn't quite work out. So they made Instagram stories and made some more stuff, you know.
And what's happening with Snapchat?
Yeah, exactly. So they they couldn't get their hands on Reddit. And so what are they doing? They're making their own Reddit.
Exactly.
You know, it's like I don't know. I mean, it's hard to say. Some of the stuff takes, like Instagram, and like Instagram's morphing into Snapchat, and some of the stuff doesn't take. So, you know, Facebook can't do everything correctly. I mean, they do have the money and the brain power to be able to really sort of try their own version of it. And now, the important thing about Facebook is, as you just highlighted, they have the user base.
Exactly.
So they can try all kind of shit. Exactly. They can beta test this for 100 million people.
And that's probably more than,
their competitor. Than their competitor's whole user base.
So exactly.
They'll beta test them a quick 100 million, see how they like it, and then give it to the whole 2B.
100%.
You know? Like, and so that's the advantage Facebook has, is just sheer size. I mean, Facebook and Google
they're
are
titans,
killing
bro.
On sheer size.
Size alone.
And so...
that's what she said.
Yeah. that's it. So my answer is... Yeah, I think that this does have a potential to do something. I just feel like that the people who frequent Reddit are the kind of people who rail against Facebook.
Right.
So it's not really the same. It's a Reddit-like feature, but the people who populate Reddit aren't really the guys you're going to be bumping around Facebook.
I guess the question I want to hear you answer is like from a user perspective. Because like Facebook, all right, so Reddit is more about news and information and more opinion-based, right? But Facebook supposedly, quote-unquote, is supposed to be about community, right?
Right?
And bringing people closer. And so if you have this functionality now where you can say, I don't like what you're saying, thumbs down.
Yeah.
Like, is that creating cohesiveness as a community or is it, like, creating more division?
Yeah, it's a good point. It does seem to sort of fall right in line with our sort of, you know, divisive political, world we live in, where, you know, this pundit world where it's like, I'm on one side, you on the other, we're screaming at each other, I like, I don't like. That sort of seems what Facebook is about anyway right now. It's like really long posts about, you know, why Trump sucks, or long posts about Trump being awesome, and then a bunch of comments about why the other person's wrong.
Right.
So, I mean, you know, I think it does have divisiveness, but Facebook is strong enough to know, like, by their research, this is what their users want.
Right.
You know, this is what their users, this is what driving Facebook lately is this sort of talk. I will say that the thing for me, though, just back to the whole thing, is Facebook, if I'm really honest with myself, the thing that kills me about Facebook is just the branding of Facebook. Hmm. If I woke up tomorrow and Zuckerberg's like, good news, everyone.
Who branded?
We've named Instagram Faceagram. And a big F was on there. I'd be like, hell nah. I'm leaving Facebook. I can't do it. So, but, you know, it's like, it's a suspension of disbelief for me. Like, I know it's Instagram. I know it's Facebook, but it says Instagram, so it's fine by me. So I think if the Reddit thing, if they've named it something else and tried to, like, that had a different brand or a different brand name,
right,
then maybe I think it'll take off. Hey. I don't know.
Well, another thing that they're also developing is the Tinder killer, right? Oh, so they want to even get into the whole dating world in terms of how single people, or even like open relationships, interact on social.
Right.
And so they have announced at their F8 developer conference that they're going to be testing this as well. And so their major competitor is a company called Match Group. They actually own the dating app Tinder. And so they want to be able to figure out a way to, and I guess they don't want to create an app that's just like Tinder, where it's like an app for hooking up, but more so a conduit to establish more fluidity in meeting new people outside of your friend circle. Right. So yeah, like Facebook might recommend friends to you based on the friends you already have, but what about getting even beyond that into other communities and seeing if there's some commonality where you can relate to people in that sense? So I don't believe it's just a new platform for, I guess, relationships that are. I guess what I'm saying is for all different types of relationships. Right. It's not for just one particular type of relationship. Do you think that this will work?
I do. I mean, well, let's back up. I mean, this is really a Tinder killer, because Tinder is very specific. Tinder is about, let's not get twisted. Tinder's not a dating app. It's a hookup app.
Pretty much.
You know, it's not about, like, well, I want to go on some dates.
Exactly.
You know, it's like, you know, the nature of you finding person on Tinder is for a very specific reason, 100%. Usually.
Yep.
But I will say this, the Facebook idea of doing a Tinder-like dating app that is sort of, that is based on your mobile device that you can go through, like, we don't forget that it was just 2 years ago when Facebook was exposed with doing this crazy algorithm, just trying to find if they can match people up. I'm familiar with this story. It was a story where they had written this algorithm to sort of, based on all the information that they've collected from their Facebook users, being able to find two random people and see if they would be able to match up based on all their likes and all of their comments and all things they're doing and all things they're doing. They can also project out, not only would they be a good match,
right,
but how would they be dating and
how they evolve
sexually, and how would they evolve, and maybe would they have kids, and like they're able to say, like, oh, well, you know, Joe Braswell and Marissa Serafini, they would go like a month and they would go away, and you know, Joe Braswell and Steven would go on forever and be married, you know, and have babies if that were possible. So, I mean, I think that, like, that's something, because they already have all that data and they really have this stuff on lock already.
Pretty much. It's already
in their weird Facebook R&D vault, which has all kind of shit we don't know about.
Exactly.
So it's like, it won't surprise me if, like, year after year, like, oh, good news, we perfected this.
Right. Here it is.
Because we've been doing R&D on it based on the billions of data points we've been collecting over the last 10 years of your shit.
So let me ask you this. I mean, I don't believe that when Tinder first started that, I mean, it definitely has that kind of overshadowing of it's the hookup app now. But I don't think that's what it was when it first started.
Right.
So I guess my question is, do you think that if Facebook brings this to market and they, you know, start to really get people using it, do you think over time it'll get slutted out like Tinder was?
I think that it depends on how much Facebook wants to lean into those aspects of it. Because Facebook can say, if they want, they can say, like, hey, this person is a good person to date and have kids with. This person is just a good person to hook up with.
Yeah.
Like, do you want, this is the smash?
The smash circle?
The smash circle, and this is a relationship circle. So what circle do you want to go in? Like, you know, and if there's some overlap, good concentric
for you. Circles?
Exactly. There might be some overlap. All right. You know, but because Facebook has that data, and I feel like that's kind of where we're going in general. And I think that companies like Facebook and Google are going to be, and Amazon for that matter, will be instrumental in, because the amount of data that they're collecting over the last 10 years, if you think about the data they're collecting over the next 20 years, and what they're going to be able to do with that in terms of predictive behavior. And,
exactly.
And I'm not just talking about consumers, consumer behavior. I'm talking about like lifestyle behavior.
Exactly.
And so, yeah, I think they could be slotted out, but in a good way, you know, figure out a way to sell ads and make money off of it.
100%. Well, I'll tell you one thing that is going to be selling, and that is the Oculus Go, a new Facebook product. And it's offering virtual reality for the consumer without
having... We should change the show to GNF.
I know, right?
Their Facebook. Go ahead.
It's a headset where you can use virtual reality without a smartphone, which I think is pretty cool. It's going on sale actually today in 23 countries. And the base model is about $200. It has 32 gigabytes of storage. And there's also a 64 gigabyte version that will sell for $250. And so, Mark Zuckerberg is saying that this is the easiest entry point to get into the virtual reality, and not having the requirements of having to have a smartphone makes it way easier for people to kind of get in. Like the entry level was way, the entry level and the access to content is much easier now. So, do you think that this is going to go essentially?
I do. I think that like the thing with, the virtual reality is coming. Like it's here. Augmented reality, virtual reality, all those things are sort of here. They're coming. The biggest hurdle is trying to get the hardware, because the gap between what's out there in software and getting it to consumers is the hardware.
It's a
big hardware piece.
That's the scale.
You have to have a phone. You gotta get to put the thing in the phone. Exactly. And walk around the big, you know, thing on. So as soon as we can figure out how to like make that easier and easier to get to, and that costs money.
That's right.
Now it costs $500, and it's $300, and now it's $200. So the sooner we can get that price down,
it's about $20.
Yeah, I don't know. For me,
I got this $20 headset, brother.
You looking what? But what I mean, as soon as we get that price down and to something that where it feels like, you know, the technology shrinks, it will be there. And so yeah, I think this is. Every time the price point goes down by half, then you're going to get that many more users on board.
100%.
So I agree. I think this would be great.
And it's kind of like, I mean, what you're saying is spot on. It's like Tesla. Like when they first started with the Roadster, it's like this expensive vehicle that's only for, you know, it's like a pyramid. It's like at the top, it's only for a few people that can buy it. And then round two, phase two, will make a luxury vehicle that's more attainable.
Right.
It still costs over $100,000, but more people can get into it.
Yep.
And then the third tier is we're going to go for mass. We're going to have a Tesla that everyone can get in for $30,000.
Right.
I think it's the same thing kind of with a lot of these industries where the price point starts at high because they're still testing the technology and they're still trying to find the right processors and the materials to make it. And then once they start to develop it further, then it becomes less expensive. And I think we're kind of in that territory.
It's on a side note. You made me think about this, but do you consider Tesla a luxury brand?
I mean, without question.
Yeah, but isn't it interesting because I think that like they... I guess the technology and what it is, and that the first couple of cars are luxury cars, and the Tesla is a luxury car, no doubt. But when they drop their price point down and are not making quote unquote luxury car prices, is it still a luxury brand? So I mean,
why not?
There's no $30,000 BMW or $30,000 Mercedes or $30,000 Lexus,
right?
But you know.
But like, is luxury only defined by the price tag?
I guess this is the question.
Because I think there's multiple currencies, like, and I think that Tesla has done a great job too in terms of the lifestyle, in terms of like the persona of it. Like, hey, this is like an iPhone. iPhone's a luxury product.
Sure.
And when they first start drop those, I mean,
yeah.
Prices have fluctuated because now it's like way high again. But I feel like this was the coveted product. Now everyone has them.
Right.
Same thing. It's still a luxury product though.
And the iPhone 10s are now feel like they're luxury products. You see some of the 10, you're like, oh, okay, I see.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly.
I'm not going to talk about this guy right here.
Because the last time you came, you had the Fitbit.
I know. I finally got the iPhone Series 3 cellular joint, and I love it.
Yes, sir.
As I knew I would. It only took three generations. All right, so go ahead. Yeah, but I do think this will be a success.
Definitely, man. Well, we talk about all the time, you know, growing and expanding and developing yourself and improving in life. And for those of you who share those same sensibilities, I have the perfect podcast for you. And it's a podcast right here at AfterBuzz. And it's called Conversations with Maria Menounos, podcast edition. It's hosted by actually Maria, our AfterBuzz TV founder, and it drops every Friday on iTunes. And it's a fantastic podcast. Again, it's called Conversations with Maria Menounos. It features celebrity and influencer interviews, and she breaks down all different types of secrets and tips of how to have a better focus, a better outlook on life, and just how you can develop mentally, physically, spiritually, from health to wellness to career to relationships, finances, and much, much more. Like, Maria is almost like your personal mentor. And I think listening to this podcast, you'll get a lot of gems that will help, you know, you navigate your journey. And so I encourage everyone out there to go to iTunes and to subscribe to Conversations with Maria Menounos for free. And be sure to rate and comment. And when you do, let them know that Joe and Akili sent you there. You know what I'm saying? Again, Conversations with Maria Menounos podcast edition. Check it out.
Love Maria. Love Kevin. And been, you know, able to get sort of knowledge and insight from them over the years for a long time. So now the fact that you can share this with the world is fantastic.
Yeah, man. So let's get into stuff that I know that, you know, you really geek about.
All right.
All right. Avengers Infinity War. Have you seen it?
Yes.
Damn it. I haven't seen it yet, bro.
No.
So no spoilers.
Okay.
Okay. Was it all that people are saying it is?
Yes.
All right.
Well, I mean, I think that, like, without giving spoilers, I think that the biggest question of this is from a storytelling standpoint, are you going to be able to have with, I think it's like 24, you know, main characters, 26 main characters, are you going to be able to give all these folks some screen time and some decent screen time and then also like some meaningful screen time? And then, of course, there's action. Am I going to be able to see, you know, everyone I want to see fight and how they fight and all the other stuff and still have a comprehensive story? The movie is 2 hours and 39 minutes, almost 2 hours and 40 minutes long. It's long. So, yes, but what they did, and this is not giving anything away, they did something really, really smart.
Really?
And I heard some of my colleagues, you know, Andy Greenwald Andy Greenwald and Chris Ryan, excuse me, talk about this on their pod. This really smart thing where they didn't do a lot of intercutting like most of the things do. It's not like you start, you know these movies, you'll go to a certain point and then you'll cut to back to another action. You go to a certain point of action, you
so
cut back to another.
So sustained action.
Not sustained action, sustained storylines. Mm. Like they do, like they have like what I feel like is like a mini 20-minute Guardians of the Galaxy and Thor movie. And they have a 20-minute, you know, Black Panther movie.
So these pods.
20-minute, yeah.
Got it.
And so they have like four 20-minute movies with a finale.
Wow.
Which feels that I feel like that.
But
feels
it's still
like,
all cohesive.
Oh, it's all cohesive. Mm. It's just a different way to tell that story. Mm. So instead of a lot of heavy, you know, cutting back and forth between like six or seven different planets and locations and 26 heroes, you get kind of like you get some time, so that enables you to sort of build
settle
these
in.
Characters out,
right.
Settle into yeah. these characters, get a sense of them, get a sense of their plan, what they're doing, and then towards the end, you do get some cross cutting and intercutting and everything else.
Right.
You have to have that
exactly,
but it's a really good way. I think that if anything else, I mean, as storytellers, and I think it's just a really should be studied in a way to tell stories, because don't forget, this is not only the culmination of 10 years of Marvel movies,
exactly.
But I think in those 10 years, you have 19 movies.
Right.
And every one of those movies has connective tissue that leads up to this movie.
That's fantastic.
I was just thinking about that when watching this. I'm like, God dang, you really would have to watch, and especially the last four movies.
Right, right.
Especially, you know, Ragnarok, Guardians 2, Doctor Strange, and Black Panther.
For sure.
Like, you have to, if you haven't seen it, please at least watch
right, those.
Those. At least watch Guardians 2. And even, I would say Civil War. Even
yeah, right.
I would say even Civil War, Guardians 2,
I mean,
Thor,
Civil
Ragnarok,
War.
And Black Panther. Like you almost yeah. and Doctor Strange.
Yeah,
you need all five of those movies to really even just get into this one.
Yeah,
what? Because there's actual stuff that happens in those five movies
that set the stage for this.
That set
one.
The stage. Now, of course, the other 12 movies that I didn't reference
backstory. Come on, context.
There's backstories, mostly in the form of like.
People are relating, how the characters are relating.
Right. Yeah. You know, but yeah, so it's a fantastic movie. I think everyone does a great job.
Well, I'll tell you what is fantastic is that they're bringing in that moolah, that money, man. It's the biggest box office opening ever.
Sure.
We're talking about just North America launch alone. First weekend, $258 million. Mm-hmm. Internationally, it secured $382 million, giving a global total of $640 million, damn. Joe.
Yo, it's a lot of money, and I feel like I'm a huge fan of the Marvel Studios, and huge fan of Kevin Feige and everything he's done, and the acquisition of Disney. Fine, I'm also a huge fan of Lucasfilm and everything that Star Wars has done, and I'm a bigger fan of Kathleen Kennedy, who presides over both. I mean, well, she presides over Lucasfilm, but you know, she presides over Lucasfilm, and so, but I did get this sense of embarrassment of riches for Disney.
That's what I was about to ask you. I want to ask you that because I feel like Marvel was kind of like sunned Lucas. Like, it's sunned them. It's like, you're my little brother now. Like, yeah, you were here in the 80s. You know what I'm saying? But like I toppled you. Like, good try on trying to come back.
Yeah.
But like, it's no competition. We're almost hitting $20 billion, my man, in 10 years.
Yeah, I think that it's funny that that's one way to look at it. And I'm trying to pull this thing up right now. It's one way to look at it. But on the other hand, it's like they're all the same company. So this is what I saw. This is an Instagram photo of it's from Kathleen Kennedy, you know, to the Marvel people. So basically from Kathy to Kevin Feige.
Some reverence.
It's a bit of like, you know, from studio head to studio head, you know, from me, Kathleen Kennedy, to you, Kevin Feige. And it's basically someone passing over the light. It looks like Rey passing the lightsaber
right.
to Iron Man, right. saying like, and the note is, oh God, I can't barf. The note is, from a galaxy far, far away to Earth's mightiest heroes, congratulations on the biggest opening weekend in history.
Okay.
From Kathleen and everyone at Lucasfilm.
Get out of here.
Exactly. And Disney's just like laughing.
Man.
Swimming in cash.
Swimming in
and
money.
It just came as maybe as a jaded middle-aged guy. Just kind of came brought to life that my favorite IP that I love, both these things I love are really just corporate, you know.
Hey, but they're doing
money machines.
They're doing a great job. They created the infrastructure and they're raking it in.
Yeah.
But one thing we didn't get to share on the show was the whole Black Panther.
Man.
Just, you know, going through that whole experience of watching the movie. And just, man, like, we're still making records with that movie. But, yo, since you haven't been on the show that long, let's get into your mind about Black Panther. What are your Black Panther takes, bro?
Black Panther, just, you know, I mean, this is from February to now, and the movie's still resonating. I do have a confession to make about Black Panther.
Oh, no.
I didn't see it. that would not be funny. No, I only saw it once. I've only seen it once, which I really wanted to see in the theater multiple times. I just didn't have the time. We were able to take, this is not a humble brag, but we were able to take our whole staff to see Black Panther. And as a, you know, we have a 90% African-American staff. So that was really special. And we saw it on opening night together. And look, in my lifetime, I didn't really understand the significance of what I was watching until I was watching it in real time in a packed theater in terms of just...
You mean like the cultural zeitgeist significance?
I'm talking about like how dope it is to see a black-led, black-directed, you know, superhero feature film like in real time, extremely well done, and it not done in a way that like it is... you know, in the 80s or 70s, like We the Black version,
that's still very culturally specific but still inclusive
and also, you know, coming from, you know, the idea that the highest technology and the most richest resources come from Africa.
Correct.
And the idea that, you know, all of the sort of the ideas behind
the ideology
that made the mythology of Black Panther Wakanda,
right?
But just, and then also it being a dope movie, a well done, you know, action flick. But to sit around and watch black and white folks together, like a packed theater cheering,
man,
it was really something else. And man, it was a special experience. And I absolutely love the movie. I think Ryan Coogler, man, I mean, he
killed it, bro.
I don't like that's a almost $300 million budget. He had a $200 million budget. He had
200.
Man,
and they are now at I believe $688 million. For just domestic totals. So they've surpassed every single Batman movie and every single James Bond movie.
Wow.
So, but I think Black Panther is ranked 30 all 30th biggest grocer.
Sure.
Considering the inflation of all time, but still, man, like they're kicking ass.
Yeah.
Still kicking ass. It's top five, and it's with the seventh or I don't know what weekend it is, but it's like top five still.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah. Man. It's really an amazing achievement, and so and I'm glad to see it. And then this other thing that someone brought up is, you know, when you watch Infinity War, you really see the debt of gratitude that the Marvel Universe owes to
Black Panther.
Well, not only that, but just James Gunn and what he's brought to just the change he brought to in the tone brought to the Marvel Universe with the two Guardians movies.
Yeah.
You see the debt of gratitude that he owes because that sort of tone sort of is informs Infinity War a little bit in terms of the comedy and also what Ryan Coogler brought to it with Black Panther. I'm sure that these movies are being filmed.
More depth,
These movies are being filmed sort of back-to-back, and with Infinity War, with Civil War, it was sort of back-to-back-to-back.
Right.
But just that world of Wakanda and bringing that whole, the depth of that world and that, and Ryan Coogler's vision of what those people are, you know, to be able to have them, you know, in the trailer, but in a climactic battle scene, all Russian tours, that is... That's dope.
Super dope.
You know, that's just really, it's really, it's key. It's key to the story.
I am late to the party. I'm hoping to be able to go see it this weekend.
Yeah, you need to see it.
We definitely need to rap about it probably offline.
You need to see it.
But yeah, man, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
Last thing before we get out of here, are you excited about the new Ant-Man and Wasp?
Yeah, I am. I am because it's the first movie that's going to take place in a post-Infinity War world.
Right.
I think that's what they said.
They said that this movie actually, in terms of the chronology, comes before.
Oh, that's right. Because they mentioned in Infinity War it's simultaneous to that, like in the way that Black Panther sort of worked that coincided with Black Panther worked just after Civil War, it seemed like.
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
Just after Civil War. So, okay. Yeah. Well, I'm excited about it.
Were you a big fan of just Ant-Man 1 and 2?
I think the Ant-Man, I liked that. I liked the Peyton Reed's take on it. I would love to have seen my guy who did Baby Driver. I forget his name, but who was originally supposed to direct it. I would love to have seen, thank you, Marissa. I would love to see Edgar Wright's take on it, because I know he did a very funny trailer that's still out, that kind of has his very much tone to it. But I think Peyton Reed did a great job of the Ant-Man, bringing the humor and sort of heist. Sort of, it makes it its own world, but also connected to the larger Marvel Universe, but also its own world, which is hard to do when you're dealing with a Marvel Universe that has, Doctor Strange and Guardians and now Infinity War, galaxies and other dimensions and realms and aliens, and then you have, I'm just doing a heist, you know?
Exactly.
So, it'd be interesting to see what these worlds look like grounded in. Like what Black Widow's world looks like if she gets a movie, what Hank Pym's world looks like, and also even Spider-Man to a certain degree. These people's world is just kind of like grounded, very much grounded in a neighborhood situation.
Exactly. More community based, more neighborhood based versus like this
giant galactic or interdimensional, with Doctor Strange. You know, it's like it's.
So you have that. I love the fact that you had that macro to micro. Like, we can be so far out in terms of the imagination, but also so centered and grounded. That's the best word to put it.
Absolutely.
But yeah, man, that closes it out for us. Cool. You know, again, man, happy to have you back on the show.
I'm back. Glad to be
my
back.
Partner, knocking it down.
Yep.
But where can the people find you, man?
Oh, you can find me still at Joe K. Braswell on Instagram and Twitter. I'm not gonna tell you where you can find me on Facebook, because I might delete that joint.
Stop it.
Where can people find you?
Man, they can find me on Instagram and Twitter and Facebook at Akili Shine, AKILISHINE. Appreciate you guys for tuning in and listening to us and downloading us and supporting us. We appreciate it. We will see you next week.
Peace.
Online broadcast network dedicated to African American entertainment. For questions and comments, contact us. info@blackhollywoodlive.com. Like us on Facebook, tweet us, or Instagram us at BHL Online. And I am the official voice of Black Hollywood Live, Scipio, Instagram at KingXOBay. Thanks for tuning in. The views expressed here are those of the host only and do not necessarily reflect the views of BHL or its owners or principals.